Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It is Friday, January 5th, 2024. And I'm your host, as always, The Pody. What's going on, people? Happy New Year. I know Larry David says that Wednesday, the 3rd of January, was pretty much the last day that you can wish people a Happy New Year, but I haven't seen yous. It's still technically the first week of January, so I'm going to say it anyway. And I've been away for a couple weeks now. Of course, we had the Christmas break, holiday break, the New Year, etc., etc. I was away on vacation or holiday, as people in the UK like to say, or my sister-in-law likes to say, away on holiday. Anyway, a lot has changed since my last episode. I think this is my first episode since my LASIK procedure. I could be wrong. That was on December 15th. That might have been, yeah, that was probably, my last episode was probably before my LASIK. So I've had LASIK since December 15th, and all is well in the world. All is right in the world. I have 2015 vision, so that is better than 2020, which is great. I've kicked the drops for the most part, just here and there. I wake up about 5:30. My job is from 7 o'clock to 3 p.m., so I have early hours, and I don't get, you know, my full 8 hours of sleep every night, but things have been great. So I just use the drops, artificial tears, whatever you want to call them, every so often when I need them. Like, I got home before I took the drops, just because, you know, it's cold out, winter time, and if I feel I need them, my eyes are a little dry or bothering me, I'll just pop them in. No big deal. So I'm seeing perfectly. Everything's back to normal. I'm loving life with my new vision, not having to wake up, worry about putting contacts in my eyes. They made me drowsy. I'd get headaches. Everything's going great. So I hope everybody had a great Christmas. You got whatever you wanted from Santa, from your family, relatives, spent time with family, etc., and everything's going well. I had an eventful trip down to Myrtle Beach with my family. My parents and my 92-year-old grandfather went down there to get away from the Jersey crappy weather. It wasn't much better there down in South Carolina, just a little bit better. But I got to play golf 3 days while I was there. And I don't know what happened, but it was a 12.5-hour trip. We hit a ton of traffic. That should have been a sign that I should have hopped on a plane immediately the next day and hoofed it back to New Jersey, but I did not, and I proceeded to play golf and proceeded to play some of the worst 3 rounds of golf in my entire life. And it's funny, a little bit of a coincidence, that the last time I played this badly was also in Myrtle Beach, and I don't understand what it is about playing there. Obviously, the courses are harder. I'm not used to them. I don't play them as much, but that's not the issue I had. I completely lost it. I had the yips, apparently, and this happened to me last time I was there, and I kid you not, it took me a year and a half to get my swing back. And I say a year and a half because that's literally how long it took, but in terms of golf time, it was probably like, you know, a month, because I don't play often enough that it was just I'd say maybe 10 rounds, if that, maybe 12 rounds of golf or so, to get my swing back, because I don't play enough and didn't go to the range long enough, or just didn't have time to go to the range to really work on my swing. But yeah, when you get the yips like I had it, you're just shanking balls. You don't know where it's going. I struggled to drive the ball, really. It was nothing. There was nothing I did right. But it's so true. Everybody does say it doesn't matter how bad you play. You hit that just one shot, and it brings you, it's everything, and it keeps you coming back for more. So there's just one shot I can think of where I just was playing so bad. I shot over 100 every day. Like, that's not, I can nowadays, like when I'm good, right before I went a couple weeks back, I played and shot an 86 or an 87 at one of my local courses, which is pretty good. And I play with my brother and his two buddies from high school, and I smoked all of them. So, you know, I'm a decent golfer for what I am, for barely playing 25 rounds, I think, my Arcus app said I played last year. And so, yeah, I just, every ball was going every which way. So I had that one chip with my 60 degree, just a beauty of like a flop shot. And it landed like 6 feet from the pin. I missed the putt, of course, but, you know, and it was probably for like an eight. But either way, I'll get my swing back. It's just very frustrating. I had my clubs re-gripped while I was down there, too, because I'm sick and tired of the Arcus sensors that I screw into my clubs. Sick and tired of them falling out or getting loose and having to constantly screw them back in on some of my wedges as I would hit them. And so I had my mom for Christmas buy me the grips with the built-in sensors already. And I brought them to a local shop down in Myrtle Beach, and they do a great job. They charged me $3 a grip or a club. I had 13 of them, so it was totally worth it. And I'd go back every single time. But I was ready to throw the clubs in the garbage after playing those couple of rounds. And so I'm going to take a bit of a break. I won't be able to play now anyway. We're supposed to get snow this weekend here in Jersey. It's middle of winter. My dad plays, but I'm not playing in this kind of weather. That's the other thing. I was wearing a snow hat, you know, like a skull cap, because it was that cold and I was all bundled up. So it's hard to play when you have cold weather, a lot of, you know, wet. It was a lot of wet conditions. It was cart path only for 2 of 3 days. The third day there was like 6 holes that was cart path only. So also very tough, not knowing what clubs to take, but it was no excuse. I was literally shanking balls. Obviously, I was doing something wrong. My body's doing something different than my hands, and I'm not good enough to figure it out. And it's such a mental game that you start trying to diagnose what you're doing wrong and try to make changes on the fly. It just was not working. Nothing was working. So I'm going to put it behind me, and hopefully, you know, I can only go up from here. So again, with that being said, I hope everybody enjoyed their Christmas break. And now that we're back in the friggin' swing of things and work and everything else, we've got some sports to talk about, because we've got NFL playoffs coming up. We've got week 18. We've got all sorts of things to talk about. National championship, college football playoff, lot to dissect and lot to go over because we missed a couple of weeks. So with that being said, without further ado, let's jump in. Episode 229 of This Week in Sports. Let's do it. Okay. So, first up, oh, and by the way, wasn't able to get my gambling fix in, my sports betting fix while I was away. It was kind of nice because I was busy playing golf and things, but I missed it, came back, placed my first bet for the new year, and I lost. So I'm down. Ending the year into the new year, it's not good. Not off to a great start this year in anything. So, but with that being said, let's jump in here, and we're going to talk about the NFL playoff picture real quick, and then I'll jump into the CFP, and we'll go from there. Okay, so the number one seeds in the NFL, in the AFC and NFC, are finally locked up, and it's the Baltimore Ravens, who I said at the beginning of the year in the offseason that they were my pick to win the AFC North. The Bengals were favored, Joe Burrow this, Joe Burrow that. Joe Burrow didn't finish the year. And the Ravens were like plus 225 on the money line to win that division, and they win it seemingly year in and year out. So I couldn't believe those odds. I'm an idiot for not betting it. Hate to say it, but that's the truth. I was also on the Saints to win that division. That's still a possibility, but more than likely, it will be the Buccaneers who are playing the Panthers and need a win to secure the division title there. So you have the Ravens. I did not, full disclosure, I didn't get to watch a lot of these games. So on the 30th, I believe it was, when these games were occurring, me and my mom were actually flying back from Myrtle Beach. So my dad and grandpa stayed down there because they're both retired and for a few extra days. And then me and my mom had to come home because we still work, obviously. So we took a plane ride back, which was awesome, much smoother. Although going through security, somehow my mom lost her printed out boarding pass. So we printed out the boarding passes because Spirit pretty much sucks and you don't get it in the wallet app on your phone. And we go through security and her printed out boarding pass, she put it in the little bin with her clothes, her jacket, whatever, purse. She goes through, she gets her bag eventually fine, but then she goes to this other area to sit down, put her shoes on and everything. And I'm waiting for my book bag, and I had a book bag, a vest, a North Face vest they told me to take off, my shoes, my phone, whatever, not anything crazy. And in my book bag, because that's all I brought was a book bag. My dad had my other little carry-on suitcase that he was going to drive home with all my clothes in it. I had my Apple TV, my toiletry bag, and my iPad case and my Kindle I actually was holding, so I put those in the bin separately. And my bag's just not coming out. I suspect somebody's, like, luggage was holding up the x-ray machine. They were having a look through it. Then all of a sudden, I see my bag, and they put it to the side, which means it's in it. It's not coming down the carousel, the belt, and I'm not getting it anytime soon. So I'm just like, really? So I'm waiting patiently because I know, you know, we got to the airport with plenty of time, and it's actually working out perfectly because we're about to board in a few minutes, and we're zone two, so it'll work out perfectly. I hate sitting and waiting at a gate for God knows how long. Whenever I get there too early. So finally, this guy comes over, TSA agent. He's like, whose bag is this? I said, mine. He starts going through it. He pulls out my toiletry bag. He's going through the side pouch. I've got a single edge razor in there for edging up my beard, which, by the way, I took out the razor blade. I was like, yeah, there's no razor in there. He confirmed that. Okay, he starts feeling the side. So, you know, whatever. Eventually, he stuffs everything back. It's like, here you go. They didn't take anything out. It was total BS, whatever. So I get my clothes on and I get my shoes on and everything. And then my mom's like, I can't find my boarding pass. It's missing. And she tries to come over and look through bins. Like, it's long gone. Her bin was, like, at the bottom at this point. So I was like, great. We'll have to try to get it on the stupid Spirit app. So I start typing in the information because she booked it. It's all under her email and everything. I look up her email, find the confirmation. I start typing it into the app and the last name and the email, and it's not working. It's just throwing errors in the airport. And I'm like, flipping out. So we get to the gate. I'm like, all right, worst case, you could just go ask the person up at the gate. You know, the ones that are calling, like, okay, zone one now, this, that, whatever. The people that work for the airline, and you can get it. Well, she's like, oh, well, I took a screenshot of it. Okay, fine. So she had a screenshot of the little, like, QR code, the scanny thing. So she was able to just use that to get right on. But right as we got to the gate, it was perfect because they started calling zone one and we were zone two. So we got right onto the airplane and we came home. And then my brother, who was at the Giants game with his wife, because they're Giants fans, against the Rams, which actually turned out to be a really good game. Giants missed a field goal at the end to win it. He came and picked us up because he was only 15 minutes from Newark Airport. So that really worked out well. So I missed a lot of these games, and I missed the fact that the Ravens absolutely obliterated the Miami Dolphins 56-19. And my God, it is hard to imagine that this is the same Dolphins team from earlier this season that put a 70 spot on the Broncos. And to make matters even worse, Bradley Chubb tore his ACL with 3 minutes left to go in the game while the Dolphins were down 30 points. What is a starting edge rusher doing in the game with 3 minutes left to go? Well, I heard on the radio some clips of McDaniels. He kind of like dances around questions and he just has an abstract way of answering things and then finally gets to what he's trying to say. But here's part of what he said, and then I'll go into what I heard that I don't have audio for, but I'll just tell you what it was.
In hindsight, I would absolutely not have wanted him out there if I would have known that he was going to get hurt, for sure. Like, and that's part, that's a known part of the job that, you know, I understand fully. It doesn't look very smart at all.
No, sorry, I had myself muted there because I was taking a sip of something to drink. No, it wasn't very smart at all. Now, other clips. So WFAN played a bunch of clips. It was like a whole 2 minutes plus clip of him just dancing around stuff and talking. So apparently what happened was they were in the process of pulling starters and there was a turnover. Mike White fumbled because the Mike White was in for Tua at this point. Mike White fumbled. The Ravens got the ball back on offense and Bradley Chubb just ran into the game. The starting defensive players ran into the game and he was one of them and they couldn't get him pulled in time. And then what do you know? He's chasing down, I don't know, was it Lamar Jackson, whoever it was, and his knee, he went to plant his leg, and his knee just went sideways, and he tore his ACL. And so it's just devastating. Jalen Phillips went down. Like, this team is not the same, and now they are in a dogfight for their lives against the Bills, in which they don't win that game, they don't win the division. Now, I believe they have a spot locked up for the playoffs. I know the Bills, if they don't win, they're out of the playoffs. But in terms of playoffs, if the Dolphins were to lose this game at home to the Bills, they are still in the playoffs. They have clinched a spot because they are 11-5. A loss would push them to 11-6. And that third and final wild card spot, the best record that team can have is 10-7. So the Dolphins have one game on them there, which is a little curious. Buffalo's 10-6. A loss would push them to 10-7. That could be tied with Indy. That could be tied with Houston, possibly Pittsburgh. So yeah, they would be out in terms of like head-to-head scenarios and stuff, and who has advantages over other teams. So yeah, it's going to be a wild final week in the NFL. But I don't have the Dolphins beating the Bills. The Bills are one of the hottest teams in the NFL, and if the Bills win that game and beat the Dolphins, they win the division and they become the number two seed. And unless they play Baltimore in the playoffs, which would be an AFC championship game, they have home field advantage. And just a reminder, they changed the format of the playoffs a few years ago. Only the number one seeds get a bye in the first round. So Ravens, 49ers, which, by the way, the colors of the Super Bowl logo are Ravens and Niners colors. And for the past few years now, those colors have indicated who plays in the Super Bowl, which is just weird. And it's going to be a cool little Harbaugh flex if Jim wins the national championship on Monday night against Washington, and then John Harbaugh wins a Super Bowl, kind of like when those two teams met in 2012 and the Ravens beat Jim's 49ers. So pretty cool stuff there. But yeah, not a good look for the Dolphins for sure. And just to make matters worse, earlier in the week, I was actually texting my brother, because he lives in Fort Lauderdale now, about 35, 45 minutes away from my brother. Tyreek Hill was at practice when his $6 million plus house in, I think, Davies, Florida, or Davies County, wherever it is, caught fire. He had to immediately leave practice, and you could see him. There's helicopters, there's newscasts, news footage. Everybody, Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, spoke on the matter, said family was home. Everyone was able to get out of the house. It was pretty much contained to one room. I saw Rick Ross make a video saying because of all the smoke, it proves that it's like an electrical fire. I didn't keep up with it too much, but his house didn't actually burn to the ground, suffered a lot of damage, but you know, it could have been a blow. Like, houses catch fire for all different types of reasons. But yeah, imagine being at practice and finding out your house is on fire, like your wife or whatever calls, and you have to run home. And he was also seen in a boot. So I guess he's still dealing with that ankle injury. So something to keep in mind for this weekend's game. What is that, Sunday night football, I believe? So yeah, Miami Dolphins are taking L's all over the field right now. And it doesn't look good. So, speaking, actually, I want to get back to the Baltimore Ravens. My New York Jets actually waived Dalvin Cook a couple of days ago. This has just been an absolute disaster. I think we paid Dalvin over $6 million this year, and everybody could say, oh, we didn't think Breece Hall would be back and full strength or as healthy as he was so quickly. That's why we signed Dalvin. Dalvin Cook was an absolute disgrace for the New York Jets. I think the second Aaron Rodgers went down, this whole team was shot. And Dalvin Cook claims to be a running back who needs a lot of touches to get going. And nothing I saw indicated, like last year, that he would have such a decline. But it seems to be that anytime these superstar players come to the Jets, something always goes wrong. So they waived him. He went unclaimed on waivers, and then guess who signed him? And it became official not an hour ago that Dalvin Cook has been officially signed to the Ravens practice squad. This is important because the Ravens have lost a couple running backs this year, J.K. Dobbins, and then I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the dude that was really fast a couple weeks ago, he went down, and I think he was undrafted. And they have Melvin Gordon, who they brought up from the practice squad on and off, and Justice Hill, and then, of course, my man Gus Edwards from Rutgers and Miami. And so adding Dalvin Cook as the one seed, they have a bye next week in the playoffs in the first round. So they have a chance. Dalvin Cook can get acclimated to this system. They can determine whether they probably drop Melvin Gordon back to the practice squad or just straight up maybe they release him. And now you have a monster in Dalvin Cook who's looking to prove something. He's on a team contending for a championship, so he has more to fight for. The Jets were out of the playoffs. There was no hope since Rodgers went down, really. So he hasn't been maybe playing as hard or is on a team with one of the worst, probably the worst offensive line in the NFL, the most combinations, I believe, in the entire league. And there's no gaps, no running lanes, nothing. And now he's on a team that's actually a perfect fit, and I'm pretty mad about it because it shouldn't be allowed that you could just drop a player so they can just have fun, go join a Super Bowl contender and help them win a championship. It's BS, but the players and the agents run the world of sports nowadays, and they get to dictate what they want to do. So, yeah. Okay, in other news, the Chiefs clinched the AFC West for the bajillionth time. It's every year since they've had Patrick Mahomes, although this is the first year that they won't have, I believe, the one seed or home field advantage throughout the playoffs. They survived against Cincinnati despite scoring just one touchdown. I believe Cincinnati turned the ball over a few times in that game. Just not good. The Bears officially own the number one pick again, thanks to that awesome trade they made last year with the Panthers. They enjoyed a blowout win against the Falcons, while the Panthers lost to the Jaguars pretty badly, which means Carolina will finish with the worst record in the NFL. Drafting Bryce Young might have been the worst choice possible. And David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, since maybe 2015, 2016, 2018, whatever it is, has been one of the worst owners in the National Football League. He's gone through multiple coaches, multiple quarterbacks, just you name it. And drafting Bryce Young, comparing him to the number two pick in C.J. Stroud, it's looking like they made a horrendous choice drafting Bryce Young. And to make matters worse, David Tepper got a little pissed at a Jags fan and threw an alcoholic beverage at said fan. He has since been fined $300,000.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Whatever will David Tepper do? The man is worth $20.6 billion, and he was fined a mere $300,000. Wow. It's like probably $5 to him at the end of the day. Both AFC and NFC South division titles are up for grabs in the final week of the season. Man, the Jaguars have taken a hell of a fall from grace. At one point this season, they had won five straight. They were the hottest team in the NFL, and I don't know what has happened since. But first to the NFC South, it's the worst division in the sport. You have the 8-8 Bucks, the 8-8 Saints, and the 7-9 Falcons. I don't know how in God's name the Falcons are still alive. They are one of the worst run teams in the NFL this year. Arthur Smith going from quarterback to quarterback to quarterback, from Heinicke to Ritter, or from Ritter to Heinicke, and just neither has panned out, really. They've had their ups and downs. Somehow they could beat the Saints and then have the Bucks lose to the Panthers. That would be a miracle. And then they would get in with an 8-9 record. I mean, it's just unbelievable. All three of these teams has a chance. In the AFC South, the Jags, Texans, and Colts are all 9-7. Each can either clinch the division or be eliminated from the playoffs altogether. It's a wild scenario in that one because, again, the Jags should have run away with this, and now they might be eliminated, possibly, if they lose. I talked about the Bills. They can win the division or be eliminated with a loss. You also have the Steelers, thanks to Mason Rudolph's stellar play. They inserted him into the starting lineup as quarterback the last 2 weeks, and he's been stellar. There was actually a rumor that Kenny Pickett would not suit up to be his backup, like not wanting to be a team player and take a back seat because, sorry, Kenny Pickett, you got hurt. You're not the greatest quarterback in your second year. Haven't been great. And sometimes you get hurt. Somebody else takes that opportunity and runs with it. And Mason Rudolph has run with it the last 2 weeks. Then you have the Packers, Vikings, and Seahawks still alive. Packers win, they're in. Vikings and Seahawks need help. Minnesota needs a miracle. They lost to the Packers 33-10. They don't know what they're doing. They're back to Nick Mullins, I believe, at quarterback. They're 7-9, so they need a lot of help. You have the Seahawks, who lost a bad one to who'd the Seahawks lose to? The Steelers. That's a tough one. So they're at 8-8 now. They're on the outside looking in. The Rams, they are in the playoffs. They can't finish any worse than 7th. And they're a scary team. I would not want to see them in the playoffs. But yeah, crazy. And then the team that was the number one team in the entire NFL most of the year and then just took a fall from grace has been the Philadelphia Eagles. They sit at 11-5. They're about to lose the division title, okay, to the Cowboys. After starting the season 9-1, my Jets were the first team to beat them, thank you. They have lost 4 out of 5, including the worst loss yet this past weekend, a 35-31 home loss to the Cardinals. That was rock bottom. The whole Matt Patricia and Sean Desai saga with the coordinators and just something internally is not working right. I don't know if it's that they don't have faith in Jalen Hurts at this point. I don't know what's going on, but they play the Giants for the second time in 3 weeks. And that was a close one, a few weeks ago when they played. So, if they're not careful, they'll lose that game, go into the playoffs, having lost, 5 of 6. That would just be disgraceful. Okay. I want to talk about the Broncos benching of Russell Wilson. So this happened back in November. It's all starting to come out. The Players Association told the Broncos in a November letter that they, because the Broncos had threatened to bench Russell Wilson if he refused to alter an injury guarantee in his contract. So the NFLPA sent a letter saying that what they were trying to do was illegal and violated the CBA and could result in legal action against the team. So Russell Wilson has since come out and said on Friday that he was approached by the team entering its bye week in November and was told he'd be taken out of the starting lineup for the rest of the season if he didn't push back an early vesting date on his $37 million contract for the 2025 season. This is a direct quote from Russell. "We beat the Chiefs on October 29th. They came up to me at the beginning of the bye week, Monday or Tuesday, and told me that if I didn't change my contract, my injury guarantee, that I'd be benched for the rest of the year." The Broncos subsequently did not bench Wilson. I don't know if it had to do with that letter or not. In the aftermath of the meeting, the 35-year-old veteran started the next 7 games. So Russell then started the next 7 games. The last couple, the last of which was that 26-23 brutal loss to the Patriots on Christmas Eve that put Denver's playoff hopes in peril because they were looking like a lock to make the playoffs. They had gone on this crazy run. He was playing great. Sean Payton was starting to, get things moving on offense, and then they lost that game. So Sean Payton maintains he knew nothing of the conversation, saying the number one push behind this, and it's a decision I'm making, is to get a spark offensively. Obviously, it's difficult. He did go on to say that this is strictly about football and about winning. So they inserted Jared Stidham into the lineup, and sitting at 8-8, Denver, I don't know if they can make the playoffs, actually. I don't know. There's 3 teams ahead of them that are 9-7. So I don't know, even if they win and those 3 teams lose, if they have a chance to make it, because who are they playing? The Raiders, I think? Yeah, they're playing the Raiders. So I don't know that they can get in either way. But what's insane about this whole thing is that Ryan Clark, this is a little bit long, it's 2.5 minutes long, but Ryan Clark absolutely went off on Sean Payton on Get Up. And, I went off on Sean Payton a number of weeks ago when before the Jets game or even before the season, really, Sean Payton just came after Nathaniel Hackett, who was the head coach of the Broncos before him, and just started saying all this stuff about how it was the worst coaching job in the history of the NFL. And it's like, bro, you haven't coached yet. Like, pipe down. And so I went off on him, and everybody seems to be going off on Sean Payton this year because he said a lot of stuff and done a lot of stuff that he shouldn't have done. So here was Ryan Clark on Get Up. This, he had some words for him. It was pretty pretty like eye opening. Like, whoa, he's saying this on live TV. Wow.
Tell us how you really feel. Hey, like the from a business standpoint, I agree with you. You know, Mike T, like they're making a decision based on money and the financials. And when Daniel says this is the deal that we signed or we offered Russell Wilson, it's not the deal that we or us did because Sean Payton wasn't there.
Right.
Right.
True.
And so the business of it is not a problem to me. But let's be honest. Sean Payton has behaved as a thug since he became the coach of the Denver Broncos. Immediately when he gets in the building, he starts to undercut Russell Wilson personally and professionally from his first press conference on. He tells Russell Wilson, you have to stop kissing babies, stop behaving as if you're running for office. Nobody kissed more babies in New Orleans than Drew Brees. Period, point blank. From the beginning, he walked into this building and he had a point to prove when it came to Russell Wilson. You're going to be just like everybody else. I'm going to treat you just like I treat everyone else on the team. That's not the way it works with franchise quarterbacks, right? With a franchise quarterback, he's talked to differently. There are conversations instead of being talked at. You don't berate them on the sideline against the Detroit Lions because you don't agree with their play. We watched Sean Payton in New Orleans for a decade and a half never treat his quarterback this way. And so now as you move through and you hear about the phone call, you hear about talking to his representatives about starting, about restructuring or doing whatever they wanted him to do to the contract, this was just a means to an end for Sean Payton. This was going to happen at some point.
See,
it just happened toward the end of the... I don't believe there was a thing Russell Wilson could do to make Sean Payton like him. I think from a personality standpoint, it was a bad match. I think schematically, it was a bad match. But my point is this.
Yeah.
My point is this. Let's hold Sean Payton to some sort of professional accountability. His behavior as the head coach of the Denver Broncos is unacceptable. If I'm the Walton family, I do not want somebody representing me this way. And I want to say this about Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson takes a hell of a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
The humility that Russell Wilson has shown, the professionalism that Russell Wilson has shown inside of that building while being treated that way by that man. All I got to say to Sean Payton is you lucky you had the right one.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, yeah, he goes absolutely off on Sean Payton, and he sticks up for Russell Wilson. I will say one thing. I've gone off on Russell Wilson for all the, you know, the things that came out last year. He got his own office. He doesn't have people's phone numbers. You want to talk to him, you got to make an appointment to come up to him, and just all sorts of different things. I can tell you for certain that my oldest brother, Joe, his wife's uncle, they live in Delaware, and every Christmas Eve they go there. They have a big fancy house. They're pretty loaded, let's just say. And he was talking to my brother, you know, watching football, different things. And he said he was actually at like the Ritz or something in like LA or somewhere one time. And he's at like the concierge desk or whatever, like the front desk or in the front lobby. And this kid just comes and like runs into him or bumps into his leg. And he's like, what the hell? And he turns, and it actually turns out to be Russell Wilson, one of his kids. And Russell Wilson, he said, apologized, said he couldn't have been a nicer guy. So yes, Russell takes a lot of heat, and I've been one of the ones critical of him. And I don't know everything contractually going on behind the scenes with this whole benching and everything else. And was it sneaky the way that they decided to bench him all these weeks later? Does it still have to do with the contract? We won't really know. Will anything come of this? I don't know. But Russell Wilson, what Ryan Clark's saying towards the end of that clip is that Russell Wilson isn't the type of boisterous personality that's going to come out and challenge Sean Payton and be like, yo, I'm going to fight you right now because how dare you bench me, and get up in his face. And he's just not that type of player. Whether he badmouths him behind his back or behind closed doors to family, relatives, friends, etc., I don't know. But that's all he meant. And I was like, whoa, this is eye-opening. I mean, this is Ryan Clark, a former player, and he's calling Sean Payton an absolute thug on TV and telling ownership there, you know, the Walmart ownership, which is the Walton family, to basically fire Sean Payton. And, you know, wow. And it's been a hugely disappointing season. That's two in a row now for the Broncos. And you know what? It got better than last year for sure, but not a good look. Not a good look from your head coach and your quarterback to be, you know, fighting or have this rift going on organizationally. Okay, let's get back to business. There will be a new spring football league this year as the XFL and USFL officially merged yesterday to create the United Football League. I gotta say, I didn't watch too much of the USFL and XFL last spring after the Super Bowl ended, but I did tune in for a little bit of it here and there, and it was pretty cool that you could listen in to the coordinators and whatnot. So basically, the UFL will have 8 teams made up of 5 XFL teams and 3 USFL teams. The first game will match up the Arlington Renegades and the Birmingham Stallions on March 30th. So that's about a month after the Super Bowl. So you only have like a month hiatus if you are a diehard football junkie. Both teams won their respective league championships last year. So you have the Arlington Renegades who, you know, won their the XFL, and then the Birmingham Stallions who won the USFL championship, if that's correct, or it's the other way around. I don't know which team came from which league, but anyway, games will be broadcast across ABC, Fox, ESPN, FS1. So you will see a lot of these games, whether you want to or not. Flipping through the channels, you might see it. They don't advertise a whole lot, so you don't really get know when they're coming on. But on a weekend or random weekday or weekend day, you might flip on ESPN or Fox, ABC, and you'd be like, oh, shoot, there's a UFL game on. And then, you know, there you go. And some of these players do make it to the NFL. I mean, look no further than the Cowboys kicker himself, right? He was a kid that didn't play football, Brandon Aubrey, played soccer at Notre Dame. Then one day they're watching a football game or something, and his wife's like, oh man, you could do that. You could kick that ball. So we just started practicing. Next thing you know, he's in the USFL, and next thing you know, the Cowboys bring him in, sign him, he wins the job, and he has yet to miss a field goal. I mean, it's unbelievable. Set a record. Most made field goals to start a career without a miss. It's just, the streak is unbelievable. So he's automatic, and he can boom it. And he's like, what, 25? He's kind of old, actually. So, yeah, he was born in 95, so he's actually like 26. Yeah, he'll be turning 26. What am I saying? My sister was born in 95 this month. He'll be 29. Yeah, he'll be 29 in a couple months. That's crazy. He's a 28-year-old rookie. Yep. And speaking of kickers, I believe it was the Rams that are bringing Brett Maher back after they cut him. That's a Cowboys former kicker. I just remembered that. But anyway, I digress. Little golf. The PGA and Public Investment Fund, the PIF or PIF, did not meet their initial December 31st merger negotiation deadline, but the two sides will continue to negotiate into the new year. That's according to Jay Monahan. The sides did not set a new deadline. Monahan also said the PGA Tour is making headway on outside investment from another source. Not really that notable. I just thought I'd include it because I saw it. Okay, Michigan and Washington advanced to the national championship. Let's get into the college football playoff. I had this one wrong. I had Bama winning the Rose Bowl, and I truly believe that if these teams played after the season ended, like the following week, and we didn't have a goddamn near couple weeks off, these teams would have been fresher and they wouldn't have been so out of sync and out of rhythm. And I hate having all these weeks off in between these games, these playoff games. So I thought Bama would have won, but they got blasted on you know, the line of scrimmage, on the lines. Jalen Milroe sacked 5 times in the first half. It was incredible. But anyway, let's start with that game, the Rose Bowl. And it was as close as I expected. Me and my brother had a little money on this one. I had more than he did on it. I had 100 on Bama money line at +115 because I thought they would take it. And I was kind of hedging Portnoy, who put a milli on his Michigan Wolverines. But anyway, it started off great. Michigan was 2.5-point favorite. So, you know, I expected it to be a close game. Come down to the end, the wire, whatever. And very first play of the game, it's flashbacks for J.J. McCarthy of last year's semifinal game against TCU, where he threw 2 interceptions. First play of the game, he's rolling out to the right, and he throws the most ungodly, blasphemous, in the words of Stephen A. Smith, blasphemous interception on the sideline, and I could not believe he just threw it right to the DB. Well, they go to commercial, they come back, and it turns out the DB went out of bounds with his one foot, did not reestablish, therefore incomplete. Okay, great. Bad sign already, but we get a stop, we force a punt, and eventually Alabama runs it in, goes up 7-0. I'm like feeling good about this, but Michigan, next possession, marches right down the field, just methodical, really good drive, ties it up. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And it's back and forth for a while, but the turning point, in my opinion, for this game was when Bama held a 17-13 lead. Now, Bama went down 13-10, I believe, at the end of the first half. They got a late field goal, and special teams was key in this game. The Alabama special teams was unbelievable. That Alabama kicker, I'd sign him in a heartbeat. He's a beast. He's kicking balls that are from 50-plus range. I think he made two from just over 50 yards, 52, 53, and, you know, like 54, 55 range, and they were good. They would have been good from 65, so he's going to get himself drafted and get paid. And then the punter did a phenomenal job, too, especially when they needed it right at the end of the game. And then Michigan, you know, fumbled that punt. But anyway, tale of two halves. Like I said, Bama, Jalen Milroe sacked 5 times in the first half. They come out in the second half with the ball. They, I believe, got a field goal, tied the game, whatever. No, they got a touchdown. They were down, 13-10. They end up taking a 17-13 lead. And they're approaching midfield, they're approaching the 50, is Alabama, when this play happens that, in my opinion, was the turning point.
Just a couple of quarterback pressures. Milroe keeps it, breaks the tackle, and Sanders still on the edge, loses the ball, rolling around, and it looks like the Wolverines have it! Recovered by Josh Wallace. It was knocked loose by Quentin Johnston, and you see why no one was certain what would happen with Milroe with the ball in his hands today.
And when he runs in the open field, one of the things that he has a habit of doing is not adjusting and moving the ball to the other hand. He started to, he lost his balance, but he's facing the defender with the football. Very easy for Johnston to get his hands on it to be able to knock it away, and it's exactly what he does. So Milroe, as athletic as he is,
it's a great point there. I think that's Kirk Herbstreit. Great point there, because also of note on that play, I think it was an option with the ability to pitch it back, or at that point he held on to it for too long and he's trying to go side to side because he's just so athletic and so shifty. He's trying to make a move and make a cut in the open field that if he just had the vision and wherewithal to throw it out to the sideline, he hits the running back for a huge gain. That fumble was just the key that cost them the game. And after that, the game, you know, ends up going to overtime. They could have taken a 2-score lead. At the worst, I think they were going to get another field goal in that possession and go up 7. And, you know, if not for Michigan, they botched an extra point. They had all sorts of special teams issues. They would have won this game hands down because they were the better team on both sides of the ball, really, all day. And so this game ends up going to overtime, and Bama, who won the coin toss to start the game and deferred, they also won the coin toss in overtime, and they deferred again. You want defense to start overtime because they had been pretty successful in stopping Michigan in the second half pretty much. Well, the very first possession of overtime for Michigan, it took them 2 Blake Corum runs to hit pay dirt.
Michigan tight ends in the ballgame. They handed to Corum again and makes a cut. First down. Spins and scores. Blake Corum puts Michigan on top in overtime. It wasn't fancy. It was just old school determination on the ground. Blake Corum, another touchdown to break the Michigan all-time rushing touchdown record. And what a way to...
So he broke the touchdown record for Michigan in the semifinal to put them up in overtime. Unbelievable. So anyway, after that touchdown, I said, oh boy, that was fast. And I did not feel good about Alabama. And late in the fourth quarter, I was refreshing ESPN bet, just trying to see if I could cash out, and there was no cash out option. I knew I was done for, and I don't normally like to cash out, but that was one of those scenarios where I knew, I just had that gut feeling it wasn't going to end well, because we let them back in it. So now Bama pressures all on them. They need a touchdown to tie the game. On second and nine, they run it first down for like 1 yard. Then Milroe on second down rushed for a 15-yard, almost housed it, almost. I think if he had one more cut, he maybe does house it. But it's a good run, brings it down to the 9-yard line. Okay, so they're at first and goal from the 9. But the play calling from that point was run. Like everything was runs. So 2 runs to start the drive, get a first and goal. Then they go run on first and goal for no gain. Then a run again for a loss of 5. I can't quite remember if this was supposed to be like, if this was some sort of end around or sweep or something. I don't really remember, but whatever. It's a loss of 5. Now it sets up 3rd and 14. So yeah, actually, maybe it wasn't first and goal. No, but it had to be. It was inside the 10. Anyway, it's 3rd and 14, whatever the case may be. Milroe on this play, because everyone backed off, he was able to find Jermaine Burton, the Georgia transfer, for 11 yards. But now they're faced with the 4th and 3 with the game on the line. And quite frankly, this play call was absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking. I'll just play it for you. I still can't believe that this, with the season on the line, this was the call.
That's Williams in motion. Low snap. Milroe stopped. Michigan makes a stand and comes up with a milestone playoff victory.
Yeah, so they went quarterback draw with Milroe. And yeah, it was successful for throughout the game, but not enough so where you're running that on 4th and goal from the 3 with the game on the line. And Nick Saban said that was a play that they had drawn up for, it was a 2-point conversion play as well, and they felt that this was basically a 2-point conversion, and they thought they had a good chance. It was supposed to start up the middle, and then he was supposed to cut left. Now, replays that I saw, actually, it did look like he probably would have scored if he did make that cut left, but he never had a chance to, and he just got stuffed. And the way Michigan was getting to him all day, it was a horrible play calling. And I almost feel like they were too afraid to put the ball in Milroe's hands and have him throw the ball. They took a couple of shots deep, but nothing that really ever had a chance all game. They were very conservative. He completed like 16 passes on the day, but for just like 116 yards. So I'm very shocked the way that their offensive game plan was. This kind of looked more so like the Jalen Milroe that got himself benched early on this season, but I more so am blaming the play calling than I am him, really. It was a little shocking, again, to see the way Michigan bullied them up front on both ends. And so it's a tough way to go down for Bama. Successful season nonetheless with everything the way it started off. But to end it with the win against Georgia and then to come up just short here has got a sting for Nick Saban. Oh, so close to another national championship. Okay. The latter game between Washington and Texas, number 2 and number 3, was also spectacular. Unfortunately, I had to stop watching at halftime because I had to go to bed for work. But it was an awesome ending from the highlights I saw and everything I read and whatnot. Washington led by as many as 13 in the fourth quarter before finding themselves up 6 with Texas in the red zone and under a minute to play. So basically, let me rewind. Washington, Texas got stopped. They kicked a field goal to make it a 6-point game, and they had 3 timeouts with 1:09 left. And ballsy call by Sarkisian to kick off with 3 timeouts left. Washington proceeds to run the ball 3 times and had to punt. They also had a fair catch interference call, I believe, that gave Texas 15 yards to the 30. So, horrible drive. I don't know why they didn't try to throw the ball, get the first down, and just take a knee and win it there, but they decided to run it. Quinn Ewers in Texas then ran down to the Washington 12, and they actually had four shots at the end zone. But them, as they too, I believe, I'm assuming Sarkisian, former offensive coordinator with the Falcons, et cetera, would be calling plays, right? So he always had trouble getting, you know, getting the ball in the end zone, especially with the Falcons, like always had trouble getting the ball to Julio Jones in the end zone.
All night long, one last chance to advance to the national championship game. Ewers lobs it up, and it is incomplete! Intended for Mitchell!
Yeah, incomplete, fourth and goal, just basically threw it up. I mean, didn't stand much of a chance, really. Didn't have, you know, it wasn't a great play call, in my opinion. And four tries, and they couldn't get anything. That was with 1 second, by the way, that final play. So Washington does survive. And let me tell you, Washington's an interesting team because their last, their last handful of games, I believe, have been decided by, like, a touchdown or less. Let me just double check that. Yeah, 6 points, 3 points, 10 points, 8 points, 3 points, 10 points, 9 points, yeah, and 8 points. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Their last eight game, no, 9, 10. Their last 10 games have been decided by 10 or less points. And they've won every single one of them. So kudos to Washington and kudos to Michael Penix Jr., who is clearly the best quarterback in this college football playoff and maybe in the country. I was not sold on this kid for the 2 years he was at Indiana lighting it up and now the 2 years at Washington. But he's taken a step in the right direction. He is like Tua Tagovailoa on steroids, like Tua 2.0. I watched some of those throws he made in the first half, just darts. He can make all the throws. He can process. His accuracy on the deep balls is just so beautiful. The one touchdown over the middle, it was like, you know, a little bit of a deep slant, whatever it was, for the touchdown. It looked like he had to thread the needle almost, but I thought he threw it behind him at first, but it was just right on, it was a dime right on the money, just had such velocity on the ball, and he stands at 6'3", so he's not as undersized like Tua is. He gets with the right team. He is going to be a stud. He could be a middle to late round first rounder, or, you know, he's starting to gain momentum. He wins this national championship. Maybe he jumps into a top five conversation or a top 10. I certainly would take him over Drake May. I am not sold on Drake May. Right now, a lot of mock drafts have Drake May going to the Chicago Bears, which would just be hilarious and ironic, because they also drafted Mitch Trubisky, who wore number 10 for the Chicago Bears out of North Carolina. So to draft another North Carolina quarterback, number 10, that would be a little, that would be tough pill to swallow if he also does not pan out. But Penix ends up throwing for 461 yards in this game. And wow, I did mention not a lot of people know this that don't follow the Big Ten, but he did play for Indiana for a couple of seasons, and Indiana just had to fired their football coach middle of this season or towards the end of the season, whatever it was. And it's a tough pill to swallow because your livelihood as a head coach is all about these players, and when they just consistently transfer year in and year out, your job is at stake. And losing Michael Penix Jr. was his job. He lost his job when he lost Michael Penix Jr., and it's just nothing he could have done about it. He got, you know, there's NIL money, they're a better program, et cetera, et cetera. Although he did have Indiana at the time, they were up there as one of the, you know, top schools when he was there. They were making a push. And then I believe Penix got hurt, like broke his hip or something, and was out for the year. In his, what was that, his sophomore year? I can't quite remember that far back. But, yeah, so Indiana, I'm sorry, Hoosiers fans. I know you lost Bob. Well, we all lost Bob Knight earlier in 2023, you know, not too many months ago. And then you lost Michael Penix Jr., and you had to watch, you have to watch him going off. So I'm curious to know if Hoosier fans are rooting against him or rooting for him. Because it's always tough Like, especially when I see a player that, say, transfers from my school, Rutgers, and then they go somewhere else and they excel, or then I see them in the NFL, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I take pride in knowing that he went to Rutgers, but they kind of show him off as having not gone to Rutgers. They announce his name, and always they say that the most recent school he went to for the most part. So it's like, ah, you know. Like Gus Edwards started his career at Miami, but every time they talk about him in the NFL, it's like, oh, he went to Rutgers because he finished his career at Rutgers. So interested to know if you guys are rooting for Penix. I mean, then again, who's rooting for Michigan? Nobody likes Michigan. Nobody likes Harbaugh. Nobody wants to see him win. Or maybe you do. Maybe you want to see Harbaugh, you know, go out in a blaze of glory, win that national championship, and then go coach the Chicago Bears where he played quarterback. I don't know. Maybe. And then it's a huge win for the Big Ten in general, because now you have a national championship of between two future Big Ten teams, because Washington is joining the Big Ten next season with USC and UCLA. God, Rutgers is screwed. But anyway, they are, as for now, in the final year of the Pac-12, so it's a little fitting that they made it. A Pac-12 team made a national championship in its final year. It's the first... since, I believe, well, actually, I don't know when the last Pac-12 team was in the national championship, 2005 or 12, I don't know. But anyway, they're looking to win the Pac-12's first national championship in football since 2004. So that's pretty cool. And then also, speaking of Michigan and Harbaugh, despite the whole Connor Stallions sign-stealing saga and scandal and you name it, the Harbaugh suspension, and just all the hoopla and all the noise surrounding that program, they still maintained excellence and proved that they are the best team in the country all year long. And surprise, surprise, Connor Stallions was in attendance at the Rose Bowl. Not a great look for Michigan. I guess, you know, they can't stop him from going. I'm surprised that the NCAA is allowing this, but he's also going to be at the national championship. Again, I don't know how this guy is affording to go to these games. Is somebody gifting him a ticket? I know he resigned from his position on the football program and claims that nobody, no other coaches knew he was doing this, but there are anonymous sources, Division III coaches, that say he paid them to go to games and get secret, you know, footage for him and all sorts of stuff. So I'm pretty sure he's guilty. And who's to say he's not, you know, getting the plays from these other schools? Who knows? But I don't think it's a good look. I wouldn't want him there if I was Michigan, because then people are going to discredit this national championship. I mean, they still are going to, no matter what, if they win, but even more so if they know the guy is at the freaking game. Okay, sticking with college football, former Oregon State and Clemson quarterback, most recently with Oregon State, obviously, DJ Uiagalelei is transferring to Florida State. It is a massive addition for a Seminoles team that obviously was just snubbed out of a CFP and just went undefeated. So it's also fun to imagine the former Clemson quarterback, although going back a little ways now, returning to the ACC. He'll get to play against Clemson now, so that's going to be fun to see how they welcome him back there. In a surprising move, and this is what I just alluded to, coaches' livelihoods are built around these college players that will stab you in the back every which way to get more NIL money and to just better themselves. And they don't care about you. Ole Miss, by the way, the CFP is expanding to 12 games, and Ole Miss is right in that mix. And they have a pretty darn good team with Lane Kiffin. So this is just wow. But Ole Miss star running back Quinshon Judkins is entering the portal. The rising junior figured to be a huge key part of the Rebels' offense next season. So why is he transferring? No idea, but he's like the top player in the portal right now. Ohio State is over the Kyle McCord transfer, transferring out of Ohio State to Syracuse now, because they just nabbed themselves the top quarterback in the portal, if you will. Kansas State's Will Howard committed to Ohio State yesterday. And I think he's better than Kyle McCord, quite frankly. So I expect I mean, Ohio State will be in the CFP next year because it's going to expand to 12 teams. But I look at Ohio State to lose no more than one game, and they will be right up there competing. Okay, in other bowl action, we had Tennessee shut out Iowa 35-0 to put an end to the Brian Ferentz era. Thank God it's over. In the process, though, Iowa's punter, Torrey Taylor, Torrey or Troy? I don't know if that's a mistake. Sorry, either way. He broke the NCAA single-season record for punting yards, surpassing Michigan State punter Johnny Pingles' 1938 season. That's right. This record has held for the last 85 years. Taylor finished the year with 4,186 punt yards. Just goes to show how bad that Iowa offense was, surpassing Pingles' record, which, yes, held for 85 years. Which, even more miraculous, Pingle only punted in just 9 games that season. So the dude must have had a cannon for a foot. In the ReliaQuest Bowl, LSU and Wisconsin gave us a great one. Very high-scoring game, with LSU winning this one 35-31. No Jaden Daniels in this one, actually. You know, getting ready for the Heisman winner, getting ready for the NFL draft, yada, 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 right? So we saw none other than Garrett Nussmeier, whose father is a quarterback's coach with the Chargers, former NFL quarterback himself. So, yeah, they put up 35 points, and they won that game. But what's even more incredible, the over-under in that game was 57, so they surpassed that. LSU became the only FBS team in at least the last 20 years to go over the total 12 of 13 times this season. It's just unbelievable. And these are some of the stats that it's like, man, I wish I knew that earlier in the season so I could have just kept betting the over in every single LSU game. And there's a reason that they went over every game, because their defense was terrible and they actually fired their defensive coordinator. So there's that. Hockey, the Winter Classic took place over, you know, winter break, if you will. 47,000 fans showed up to Seattle to watch their Kraken take on the defending champ Golden Knights. They actually beat them. It was the first shutout in Winter Classic history. And that little intro video with the drone was awesome, with Marshawn Lynch, who's a minority stake, minority owner in the Kraken. And it was just, oh my God, how could you not love it? And it just, I'm not a huge hockey guy. Like, who am I kidding? I barely watch hockey. I'm a Devils fan. When they were in the playoffs, it was enthralling. It was probably the most hockey I ever watched in my life. But doesn't hockey just feel right when it's played outside? It just, it's feels like it's a sport that's just supposed to be played outside. It's awesome. In other hockey news, actually, Blackhawks wunderkind Connor Bedard is now the youngest NHL All-Star selection in league history. The kid is just 18 years old. So while some kids are still in high school at 18 years old, and some are just going off to college, this kid is making millions of dollars as one of the best hockey players in the world, and he's just 18 years old. It's just incredible. I know he had the whole situation with his teammate a few months back. Chicago's going through a rough patch right now, are the Blackhawks, but still unbelievable. Okay, switch things up to the NBA. Give a round of applause for the Detroit Pistons. You guys can take the plastic bags or the brown bags off your face and you can rejoice. The Pistons won for the first time in 28 tries. The first time since actually October 28th. On Saturday, it was a 129-127 victory over the Toronto Raptors, and that 28-game losing streak was already a single-season NBA record. Single season. It tied the Sixers' mark of 28 straight losses, which was combined over two seasons, the 2014-15 season and 2015-16 seasons. If you thought, hey, we've won one, we're on a win streak, let's go win a second or a third, think again. They have immediately lost their next two games against, I forget who they were against, but they got blown out. And now they play Golden State tonight at 10. Although Golden State just played last night, back-to-back. Could be a good spot for them. Who knows? Maybe they could pull out the W. Just incredible. And then, you know, Monty Williams was basically said he's never experienced anything like it. It was so emotional, he almost cried, because it's just like you start on a losing streak and it just keeps going and going. You start to wonder, like, question everything. Am I a good coach? Are we ever going to win a game again? Just crazy. In other news, the Knicks made, in my opinion, a terrible trade, a surprising trade. My dad seems to think it's good, but I don't. It's not going to make them championship contenders. They're still pieces away. You can say all you want that it makes them better defensively or whatever, but they added OG Anunoby. Okay, so here's the full trade. They made a trade with the Toronto Raptors, even though I'm pretty sure the Raptors are suing the Knicks, or the Knicks are suing the Raptors. They're whatever, but they put those differences aside to make this trade. Knicks sent IQ, Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and the Pistons 2024 second round pick, that's fine, to Toronto for OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, and Malachi Flynn. Right off the bat, all you're getting out of this is OG. Precious is an undersized big man. He's not going to help you at the five now that what's his name went down, Robinson. And Malachi is barely a bench player. He's not really going to help you. Another mid 3-and-D kind of guy. Okay, so OG's got great numbers, great defensive numbers, really good shooting percentage, like 36-37%. All that good stuff. He's a fine player. Whether you want to say he's better than RJ Barrett, that's fine. RJ Barrett gets to go back to his native home of Canada and Toronto, where he's a native of, so he could probably flourish and shine. The key piece here, in my opinion, is losing Emmanuel Quickley. And from what I'm hearing, Emmanuel Quickley, he wanted to be paid like a starting point guard. He wanted big-time money, and the Knicks, I guess, were trying to negotiate, didn't want to pay him the money. But he was a perfect fit here behind Jalen Brunson as the backup point guard. Great sixth man of the year candidate. And I think it's a huge loss for them. And I don't think Precious Achiuwa or Malachi Flynn are going to help them and offset that loss of IQ. I just don't. And it doesn't make them a contender by any means. Now, whether they can go out and they can get another big piece, I don't know. But I'm not sold on it at all. And I don't think that it was the right move. It's a start. I know maybe RJ took the ball away from Randall a bit much, but they're playing Philly tonight. We'll see how that goes. And we'll go from there. But the Knicks are going to have to do something if they want to, I don't know, contend with some of these teams, because they're not quite there yet. They're not competing with teams like the Clippers, who are one of the hottest teams in the NBA, and that's just in the West. They're not competing with the Bostons, the Milwaukees, you know, some of these top dogs, Philadelphia, Philadelphia, I don't know, maybe they could compete with them. They're not that great, but you get the idea. They're not going to compete with a lot of these players. So I don't know. I don't know who they're targeting, if they're targeting anybody, but they better do something, because this ain't it. Okay, Ricky Rubio agreed to a buyout with the Cavs and officially announced his retirement from the NBA. The 12-year vet has been away from the NBA to work on his mental health, and I just had a weird little glitch. With my software, with Logic Pro. So I don't know why it stopped recording. So luckily I just caught that, and we're back in business and we're going. So I'm going to finish up this podcast in the next 5 or 10 minutes, because I know it's a long one, but we had a long break and there's a lot to talk about. Last night we were blessed with two spectacular NBA games. The Spurs-Bucks game on paper didn't look like it was going to be anything special. I didn't even want to tune in, but I had like a free $25 bet on this, so I threw some money on the Bucks at -9 or 9.5, thinking they would just smoke the Spurs. But the Spurs were at home, and you know, after this, the Pistons, the Spurs are the second worst team in the NBA. But they have Wemby. He's a big get for, you know, national audiences, and he's become must-watch TV. And boy, oh boy, he did not disappoint either. Finished with 27 points, 9 rebounds, 5 blocked shots, including one down the stretch on Giannis that was unbelievable. I highly recommend go watch some of the highlights. There are 3 plays that are unbelievable. He threw one underhanded off the glass to himself for a dunk. He basically dribbled down the floor like a point guard around his back for the dunk and foul. And then he stuffed Giannis down the stretch in the final minute or two with a sick block. And Giannis had posterized him a little bit earlier in the game a few minutes before that. So he got his revenge. This kid is going to be unbelievable. I hope he could stay healthy throughout his career. I'm so glad he's on my fantasy team. He's just killing it. And it was a great game, but the Bucks did end up winning by 4 at the end. Wemby had the ball. It was kicked over to him. And then unselfish play. He kicked it right to the corner for the wide open 3, and it was missed. So they ended up losing by 4. They were down 3. They fouled, you know, whatever. And so they lost that game. In the second game of the night, the Denver Nuggets took on Steph Curry and the Warriors. Jokic is on my fantasy team as well. And after this week, I will probably be in first place, fingers crossed, in my fantasy league. And I didn't get to watch this game. I went to bed. It was on late. But I found out today that Jokic hit a ridiculous buzzer beater at the horn.
The floor.
Jokic has it. Clock ticks. Got to put one up. Jokic for the win. Oh, it's good. Jokic got it off in time. And the Nuggets win it.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? A 7-footer off the dribble.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He looks like an old man. He's throwing it up like an old man that you'd see, like dad bod that you'd see at the local Y or at LA Fitness, you know, balling out. And it's like he shoots two-handed. Like it's a two-handed soccer pass, like over his head, and he banks it in. It was ridiculous. I just unbelievable that how this good this guy is. It's crazy how he does it. In other news, the Orlando Magic announced that Shaquille O'Neal's number 32 will be the first number retired in franchise history. It will be going into the rafters on February 13th. That is significant because he joins Wilt Chamberlain as the only players in NBA history to have their number retired by 3 different organizations. Okay, let's swing things on over to women's college basketball. I'm not talking Caitlin Clark, who hit that ridiculous logo buzzer beater the other night. She's great. I'm talking about one grambling state. The Lady Tigers, for some ungodly reason, played a school, a probably very small liberal arts college by the name of the College of Biblical Studies. Never heard of them. This is a disgrace to the sport, and I'm sorry, the Grambling State Lady Tigers head coach, whoever you are, you should be fired and thrown in jail. They beat this school 159-18. They started the game on a 34-0 run and did. This sounds like it's a college team playing a middle school team. It's disgraceful. The 140, they didn't even let up. They just kept going. Clearly. 141-point win. That is the largest margin of victory by a Division I women's basketball team in history. An investigation needs to be had. We need an investigation. This is crazy. I got no words for that. The NFL announced Pro Bowl rosters. The 49ers had 9 players. That's the most. Other teams with a lot of players. You had the Ravens with 7. I know the Dolphins and maybe Cowboys had a lot. There were 4 teams that had 0. The Packers, Panthers, Commanders, and Patriots. The Panthers, Commanders, Patriots, I can understand. The Packers are vying for that final playoff spot. I'm surprised they didn't get anybody, Rashawn Gary, somebody like that, on there. A little surprising. Some notable snubs. Josh Allen. Wow. Jared Goff, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's a joke. Brandon Ayuk, CJ Stroud, Debo Samuel. Although I think Ayuk maybe and Debo were possibly like alternates. So I don't know if they were actually snubbed or not or made it or whatever. Tyreek Hill, he became the first player to make 8 Pro Bowls in his first 8 seasons. And then I read that Brock Purdy had the most votes. I'd like to next talk about developments in the Wander Franco case. So if you don't know, Wander Franco, shortstop, young phenom, was paid a boatload of money, over $150 million. I think it's like $182 million, 22 years old or so. Back in August, allegations surfaced that he engaged in inappropriate actions with underage girls. He was initially placed on MLB's restricted list, then about 10 days later placed on administrative leave and ended his season. Early last week, police and prosecutors visited two of his properties, his homes. He wasn't there. He was then ordered to meet with authorities and did not show up. So on Monday, after supposedly changing lawyers, he met with prosecutors and was detained after the meeting. On Wednesday, he was accused by prosecutors of commercial sexual exploitation of a minor and money laundering. The minor's mother faces the same charges. Why? Oh, it gets better. The story goes that he gave this 14-year-old girl's mother a small car and thousands of dollars in exchange for her consent. They actually found she had like $800 to her name in her bank account before this all started. They found money stashed, like 30-something thousand dollars in the house, like behind a wall, possibly, like just insane stuff, like out of a movie. So she knew this was happening. He was paying her off, which tells me that he knew she was underage and he knew what was going on. And then the girl, I think, is the one that might have like put this out there and got him in trouble, because I think she had beef with her mom because the mom wasn't giving her any of the money. She, you know, whatever. A judge ordered Franco's conditional release today, actually, as the investigation continues. So he's no longer detained, but I will update you in the coming weeks as we learn more. In other baseball news, the Braves have locked up Chris Sale to a 2-year, $38 million contract with an $18 million club option in 2026. This comes 5 days after the Braves made a trade with the Red Sox to acquire the left-handed starter. He's just 34 still, but he's had an injury-plagued last few years and has struggled to stay on the mound. That pitching motion always, you know, I always said it was going to come back to give him problems, and it really has. But when healthy, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and Atlanta is banking on it. Really a low-risk, high-reward type of trade. Then today, this came in. The Mariners and Giants agreed on a trade to send former Cy Young winner Robbie Ray to the San Francisco Giants in exchange for Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani. So there you have that. Okay, back to the NFL real quick. Final thoughts. Beware of Week 18. With many teams having already locked up playoff positioning, there's no point to playing their star players. That includes, and I know Adam Schefter just tweeted about it before, about official announcements of players that are out this weekend. So let me see if I could find that. Okay, I have found that. So players ruled out for this weekend include Lamar, Odell, Kevin Zeitler, Marlon Humphrey, Noah Brown, Jonathan Greenard, Amari Cooper, Miles Garrett, Dustin Hopkins, Greg Newsom, Juan Thornhill, Byron Murphy, Brian O'Neill, Jameson Williams, Aaron Rodgers, Zach Wilson, Trent Brown, Hunter Henry, Jonathan Allen, Devontae Smith, Darius Slay, Mike McGlinchey, Josh Jacobs, Michael Meyer, Rashee Rice, Donovan Smith, Aljarius Sneed, Kadarius Toney, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, Christian McCaffrey, Eric Armstead, Jair Brown, Ambry Thomas, Darnell Mooney, A.J. Dillon, Bradley Chubb, and Xavien Howard. A lot of players on teams like the Jets and stuff that are, you know, out of contention as well. But those are some of the big names. The Rams will be without most of their starters, except Puka will be playing. He needs 29 yards to break the rookie receiving record. So if you want to take his over on yards for that one, possibly, but be careful because Carson Wentz is in for Matt Stafford and he will be throwing him the ball. So good luck with that. Again, Joe Flacco also getting the week off. Cleveland's locked into the 5 seed, so no need to risk him getting hurt. Jeff Driscoll will start at QB. Blaine Gabbert will start for Patrick Mahomes, making his first start since 2018. Also, keep an eye out for other players with incentives. Again, Puka needs 29 yards, but there's players that need sacks, touchdowns, receiving yards, etc., to hit milestones and make bank and get those end-of-year bonuses. definitely some money to be made if you bet the right overs and whatnot. So keep an eye out for that. Do your research. Okay, what to watch this weekend. Tomorrow, Pittsburgh at Baltimore at 4:30. Baltimore has clinched the number one seed, and Pitt needs a win and some help. You have the Texans at Colts. That's at 8:15. That could be for the division in the AFC South. That's going to be for that other playoff spot, possibly. The winner of that game could clinch the South if the Jags lose. On Sunday, we've got Atlanta at New Orleans at 1 p.m., the Jets at New England at 1 p.m. Why is that game important? Because, well, the Jets have lost 15 straight to the Patriots, trying to see if we can ruin the Patriots' playoff positioning and beat Bill Belichick in his final game as the Patriots' head coach. Or is it his final game? Probably. Who knows? Again, Zach Wilson won't play in this game, and this probably ends his tenure in New York. We have Chicago at Green Bay, 4:25. Green Bay wins, they're in. Buffalo at Miami at 8:20. That's for the division. And then if your team's playing, good luck. Bucks are playing for the division against the Panthers, et cetera, et cetera. All right. That wraps it up from me. I don't have an on this date in sports. I was not prepared for that. And, I don't have it. I'm not going to waste my time trying to look one up live. So I'll come back with something for next week. We're an hour and 20 in one of my longer episodes of late. I apologize for that little tiny glitch. You might not even have noticed it. But it just stopped recording for some weird reason. So I'm the Pody. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to start the new year. One of my resolutions this year is to read more. So I just finished reading, actually, a couple days ago, The Outsider by Stephen King. I'm on my next book as well. I know there's a book out there. The movie's coming out sooner. It might already be out. I know George Clooney directed it. The movie about the Washington Huskies, these kids that became rowers and went to the Olympics and beat Russia or whatever. So that is a book I might look into reading, that because that's supposedly excellent. My New Year's resolution is to read more books this year. I'm setting my goal at about 15. I did not come close last year. I think last year maybe I read 9, actually. I think the year before I hardly read anything. So last year wasn't too bad. But my goal is 15, and I think I'll hit it. So, but tonight I'm going to, read for about, a little bit just to hit that Kindle reading goal because I'm trying to keep my streak alive. And then I'm playing Call of Duty with the boys tonight for the first time in a very, very long time. I haven't played Call of Duty in a while. But luckily there's four of us. No, there's going to be five of us tonight. So full squad up, and full disclosure, I'm about the second or third best in the group. And even though I haven't played in a while, I've consistently finished third at worst. So there's always that. I'm never the worst one on the group. So we're good. We're good there. So with that being said, though, guys, enjoy this final week 18. If your team is still alive, good luck. Enjoy the national championship on Monday. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully it doesn't end too late, and because I'll be betting on that game for sure. What I'm going to take, I'm not quite sure yet, but probably some anytime touchdowns, probably a nice little parlay in there as well. But good luck with your bets, and just well wishes for the new year. Hopefully this year was better than last. I'm hoping so. All right, boys and girls. I'm the Pody, signing off. This has been episode 229. Deuces.